The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker tov, chodesh tov. I think now there's a new thing. If you want to just kind of fob somebody off, then you just add the word lives matter after it, whatever it is.
Yeah, and just like that, we diminish the value of a movement. And that's the problem. Zanati, that's exactly what this is. It totally diminishes, you know, that we just totally diminish a movement.
Exactly.
You know, but it's crazy. It's crazy.
So we would never say like radio broadcasters lives matter.
No, because I'm not really sure that it does. I mean, it's very nice, and you know, we kind of we like what we do, but I don't think, I don't think we need a movement around that. All right, the Corona Cabinet yesterday announced that a series of measures to try and combat the rising number of infections in the current wave of Corona. All right, what are these measures that are now being taken?
Well, in the large part, the measures are more of the same, but stricter enforcement. That's really what the whole thing was about. They published a lengthy document which sets out what you are allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. And most of it really repeated what we already are doing or ought to be doing at least. So, you know, there've been lots of scaremongering. You know, there's been talk about the possibility of having 2,000 people intubated in hospitals in serious condition from the current situation where we've got about 40 with a potential another 2,000 people being intubated for other diseases. So some real scaremongering, some doomsday scenarios being painted in terms of what the hospitals might have to put up with. And of course, considering that we are now heading, while we're in the heat of the summer still, but you know, we're heading towards the winter season, and a lot of concern about what the winter season may bring, in addition to the usual ailments that winter brings, the usual flus and the usual pressure on the hospitals, we're going to have to deal with corona issues as well. But what's interesting is that they've decided that they're going to put stricter enforcement in place by allowing local authorities to enforce more strictly. There's going to be some sort of a directorate set up in order to coordinate the enforcement. The fines have been increased, whereas people were could be fined 200 shekels for not wearing a mask in public. That is now 500 shekels. So it's the equivalent of like 2,500 rand for a fine if you are found not to be wearing a mask in public. So there are quite extensive rules and regulations in place, including this purple standard, which has been set out for offices and for shops and for other places, where if you abide by the purple standard, which is quite extensive, then you are not obliged to restrict the number of people who come in there or the people who work there. Of course, you are obliged to maintain social distancing and to keep hygiene and all those kind of sort of things. Those are part of the purple standard. So if offices abide by the purple standard, they can, in theory, have 100% of their staff in the office working.
Interesting.
But if they don't, then there's a limit to only 30% of staff members. But social distancing and hygiene is a standard, whether you are the purple standard or not. In other words, that's an absolute requirement. Interestingly, the IDF has also implemented quite significant restrictions. For example, only 100 people can be in a dining area at any one time, unless the dining area is more than a certain distance. Soldiers have been banned from using the trains. And soldiers, once again, are being put into capsules in order to try to prevent a major outbreak within the IDF. And so they're being very, very cautious indeed. What's interesting is that the cities with the most virus discovered over the last 3 days were published. Jerusalem, 29 people. Bnei Brak, 27 people. Bat Yam, 23 people. Tel Aviv, 23. Petah Tikva, 17. Ashdod, 15. Haifa, 14. And then it goes down. Also quite a significant outbreak percentage-wise within the Bedouin community in the south of Israel. So a few hotspots that have been identified with some attempts to try to isolate those. So it's just really stricter enforcement. I think that's the message that we received yesterday from the Corona Cabinet.
And obviously a continually serious situation and one that needs a tremendous amount of focus. The U.S. administration is due to meet this week to discuss whether or not they wish to support Israel's annexation of parts of Judea and Samaria. All right, didn't the initial push towards annexation actually come from the U.S. administration?
Well, that's what we thought, right? So it's a little bit strange that they're now taking a step back to say, hang on a second. Now that Israel's discussing this concept of annexation, let's think about whether we're going to support them or not. Okay? I mean, I think it was pretty clear that the Trump administration were the ones who came out in the first place saying, we feel that Israel has the right to certain parts of Judea and Samaria. Admittedly, that statement was made as part of a wider suggestion of the creation of a Palestinian state and other things. And so now that Israel has decided to take that one particular aspect and try to pursue it without necessarily the other aspects being pursued in parallel, I think that there probably is some justification to the Trump administration taking a step back to say, hang on, let's just think about this one step in isolation and what this might do. But I think that behind the scenes, there are people who never really felt that comfortable with this at all and who are now making their voices heard a little bit louder or a little bit more clearly. I think that Jared Kushner, for example, is one of those who's not 100% on board. And it's interesting that, for example, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, will be flying back to Washington to attend this meeting. He is believed to be very much in favor of pushing the annexation plan. President Trump himself, we're not sure. I mean, I think that he's being influenced a lot by those people around him. But certainly there seem to be differing opinions within the administration. The Israeli government is now talking about annexing an amount of land which amounts to approximately 30% of Judea and Samaria, which is, I think, a little bit more significant than when we originally than what we originally thought. And the Trump administration are due this week to pronounce whether they support this or not. I think it's going to be extremely interesting to see how that comes out as a decision, how that's relayed, what goes on there, who takes which side of the fence, and whether they ultimately come out saying, we do believe that this is Israel's right, we will support you if you decide to go ahead. I don't know that it's going to come out in such clear language.
Look, as you know, I'm a bit perplexed by it. I can't really. I feel like there's so much more to this story now. In particular, why is it happening? Why is it happening in the way that it is happening? That I'm a little bit skeptical around it. But I guess time will tell, and we'll start to see what is really going on here.
There's a lot of story behind the story. There's no doubt that the timing and the method is all part of the story. I think it's just an opportunity that the Prime Minister seen, where he feels that he's got support from the US government, even though perhaps many other people around the world don't support this. But I think he's just being opportunistic and saying, now that we've got the chance and we've got, you know, an opportunity until the US elections come up later in the year, let's give it a push, because that chance may not represent itself again in the future.
Tel Aviv municipality has decided to recognize couples whose union is not recognized by the state for the purpose of municipal benefits. This is an interesting story. We mentioned it, I mentioned it briefly yesterday to our listeners. We didn't discuss it in any detail. I happen to think it's a very positive story, and I think that that the rabbinate, the rabbanut in Israel, is largely to blame for this type of thing happening. So just tell us, indeed, how's this going to work? The marriages won't be recognized by the state, but in terms of municipal benefits, it will be.
That's correct. So just, you know, as a background to those people who are not familiar with how the laws of marriage work in Israel, and because, as you rightly pointed out, Howard, it is governed by the rabbinate, the chief rabbinate, and they apply Jewish law to marriages and indeed to many other aspects of civil life that go on in Israel. It's one of the big issues on the agenda, because there are so many people who are effectively excluded, live in the state of Israel and excluded from this. What I mean by that is, according to halakha, someone who is Jewish is not allowed to marry somebody who's not Jewish. And that's how the rabbinate simply apply this law. So unless the couple who come to present themselves for marriage can both prove beyond a reasonable doubt to the satisfaction of the Rabbanut that they are Jewish, halachically Jewish, the Rabbanut will not allow them to be married. So two people who are Christians, two people who are Jews, two people who are Arab Muslims, they're entitled to marry each other in the state of Israel, and the state will recognize that. But the moment you start mixing and matching, it doesn't work. The state does not recognize those marriages when they are conducted in Israel. If, however, you go abroad and get married abroad, then the state will recognize your union and your marriage. And, of course, that applies to so-called non-traditional marriages, unions, such as same-sex couples and others who choose to enter into some sort of a union, matrimony, call it whatever you wish. But the Tel Aviv municipality has said, in spite of the fact that the state might not recognize gay couples, might not officially recognize, for example, the union of gay couples, the Tel Aviv University will grant them the rights as citizens of Tel Aviv, as residents of Tel Aviv, as if though they were married, as if though they were recognized by the state. And so that means that they will get, you know, whatever the benefits are for the rates and taxes. They will get childcare day services that couples are entitled to. They will be entitled to housing benefits and housing tax reductions to the extent that those apply to other people whose marriages are recognized by the state. And I think that this is a statement, a very strong statement. I think that the actual benefits themselves are nice and are good and are certainly something which those couples would appreciate. But I think what's more appreciated is the fact that the municipality is standing up to the state, to the Rabbanut effectively, and saying, we don't agree with the approach that you're taking, so therefore we're going to go our own way. And even if we can't influence the way that the state recognizes or does not recognize these couples, we are going to assume for our purposes that the state has recognized it, and we're going to give them the benefits that they would be entitled to under those laws. So it's an interesting approach, and certainly one I think that represents the beginning, if not the continuation, of a move towards a civil marriage rather than simply a religious one.
3451906186151019. That's how you tell me how appalling that is, and how horrified you are around that story. Very, very quickly, Anthony, we don't have a lot of time. The secret ninja missile is reported to have been used in Syria again over the weekend. What is this missile?
Yeah, I've been wanting to talk about this for a while, because this is a fascinating story about a missile that has no explosive device, that seems to be used by the U.S. Army, seems to be loaded onto drones, and it is something which, when it is launched, it's called the ninja missile because it has these swords that somehow expose themselves once it's been launched, and it's apparently a version of a Hellfire missile, and it sort of cuts through whatever it's been launched at. And so it's been launched, for example, at cars with people driving into it. And instead of exploding as it hits the car, it simply has a circular kind of effect with these swords, and it simply minces through the car and obviously minces through the people who are in that car. It's also being used at people riding motorcycles. This is like something out of the movies. Mm-hmm. It seems to be a U.S. missile of some sort. The so-called Ninja missile, also officially known as the R-9X version of the Hellfire missile. And it seems as if the U.S. government are using it quite a lot in Syria.
Very, very interesting indeed. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you same time, same place.